Good morning. And for all those dads out there, happy Father's Day. I received a couple of cards and they're having me over for some dessert after I make this talk. Okay, so we are studying A Parenthesis in Eternity by Joel Goldsmith, and we're looking at the book of John. Today, I want to continue with chapter 16, The Secret of the Word Made Flesh. Did you know there is a secret about that? And very few people find it? Well, there is. He starts us with the book of John. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. How do you see the Word? I don't know how you see it. I see the Word as the movement of Spirit. I see the Word as the expression of God. I see the Word as my incorporeal, invisible, spiritual self. I see the Word as Christ, the Christ of all being. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. That sort of suggests to me that there was something made that wasn't made by Him. And in fact, it wasn't really made. It was just a concept. The material universe and a personal self is that concept. Now, I keep getting in my meditation this morning with you guys and gals, I kept getting the word impersonal. And it came so strong that I'm going to have to allow it to come out. You have impersonal supply. The reason why you lack is because you are trying to demonstrate a personal sense of supply. And you don't have one. Oh, pardon me. That was a call for prayer. So if you feel so inclined, you can pause for a moment and pray. Okay, so let's continue. Impersonal, that's the word of the day. In Him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shineth in darkness, and the darkness comprehended it not. There was a man sent from God whose name was John. The same came for a witness to bear witness of the light, that all men through him might believe. He was not that light, but was sent to bear witness of that light. Mr. Bill here in front of you is not that light. But there is an inner, incorporeal, invisible spiritual movement in consciousness. And that is the light. And that is very much impersonal. He was in the world, and the world was made by him, and the world knew him not. And we can say that of the world today. The Christ, that impersonal, incorporeal self, is manifest as the universe, as the only self there is, as the only universe there is. And we are standing in it, and yet we know it not. But, and it's a big but, as many as received him, to them gave he power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name. So what does that mean for us? It means if we are able to enter our temple, and if we are able to, let's change that to when. When we are able to enter our temple and stand still and listen, then we receive him. We don't receive him from out here somewhere. We receive him within consciousness. And who is he that we're receiving? This incorporeal spiritual self. We are receiving the word of God. And there comes a time when we do that in every single meditation. And more, the personal sense of self simply fades away. We don't work on getting rid of it. We don't work on it. We simply practice communing inside with the Word. And the Word becomes flesh. And it begins to take over our existence, which now becomes the Word made flesh. And so John finishes this with, and the Word was made, no, he finishes with, when you receive him, you are born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but you are born of God. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us. When you're born of God, when the Word within you is moving, you feel its movement, it is expressing. And then you behold his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. You really do. That is exactly what it feels like. It's full of grace and full of truth. We could almost finish right there, couldn't we? Let's see what we have. The Word becomes flesh. That is, the Word becomes the Son of God in the consciousness, in your consciousness. The consciousness of most people is so dark that it cannot receive or believe in the Son of God. But to those who can receive, to those who have some measure of spiritual intuition, to those who have some measure of spiritual intuition, to them the Son of God can come and be received. And because the Son of God can be received even by one person in all the world, that makes it possible for all of us to become sons of God. All right, so now we understand that I am not going to just mount up to heaven and like in that movie Left Behind, and suddenly I'm not here. What we have discovered is that we receive him. We receive the word in our consciousness. And then the word slowly, as we commune with it over and over, it slowly becomes flesh, our flesh. And the word's impersonal supply becomes ours. The word's impersonal life, energy, becomes ours. The word's impersonal comforter becomes our companionship. One. We learn to, as he says in here, stop fearing, hating, or loving anything appearing in the world. We learn to love the one in the many. We are grateful for and loving the infinite substance that is our supply. We are grateful for and loving that comforter, that presence which is in all living things. And we are grateful and loving the energy, the life that is expressing as ours. And we are learning to live that impersonal life. And it is living us. We die to this personal sense of supply, which is usually lacking. We die to this personal sense of companionship, which is usually not the right one and not in agreement. We're arguing. We learn to let go of the personal sense of life in which I don't have enough energy. I don't have enough strength. I'm lacking. I'm crippled. I'm old. I'm decrepit. We let go of that personal sense of self. And the impersonal, the word, becomes flesh and starts manifesting as us. And we behold the glory. This is the only begotten of the Father, the Word, made flesh. And we behold its glory, its grace, its truth. And there's nothing left but thank you, Father. Thank you. And so to continue, Joel says, because of the spiritual relationship with God, man is one with his Creator, even though at some remote time he left his father's house and decided to be something of himself. Yes, I want my own life, but I can't give you your own life. We are one. I want my own life. Fine, you can have your own life, but you're going to have to fall asleep and dream it, because there is no separation. And so the separation will be a dream. And I give that to you because I love you that much. Thanks. Now I've had it. I'm in the prodigal state. I'm in the pig pen. I'm living this personal sense of life, which is horrible. I don't want it anymore. I want to come home. Here, you take it. Father, reveal thyself. Reveal thy presence. Reveal thy light. Reveal thy word. And let that word be the flesh of my being. We were not satisfied to share the Father's wisdom, his wealth, and his grace. So when he wandered away from the Father's house, from that divine eye, from the Word, he took onto himself the personal sense of I, trying to make his way by means of his own efforts, wisdom, and strength, but failing and failing miserably. Yeah, that's for sure. I'm probably going to say some things today that you're not going to like, and it's okay. You don't have to accept them right now. You can just take them into meditation and see what is for you and what isn't. Because you should always, 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 always trust your inner realization, your inner voice. Always trust the Word, no matter who the so-called authority is out here. So he says, we were human beings, unenlightened, unillumined. We were in darkness. We entertained a sense of self apart from God. God was a million light years away, beyond the stars. And in that sense of separation, we believe that our sins and those of all our forebears were operating to keep us from God. But in our innermost heart, we felt dissatisfied and incomplete because we had not shown forth the wealth of the Son of God, nor the health and perfection of life eternal. Feeling that absence, that sense of separateness and incompleteness, we reached within ourselves and asked, oh God, where art thou? Is there a God, or have I been deluded? Is there a supreme being, or have I been fooling myself in trying to find one? And perhaps you've had the same experience. In 1973, I sat on my front porch steps at 3 a.m, and I felt no God anywhere. And I turned and I looked at my life, and it was a horrible mess. It was not good. So I let out a cry. I said, God, Jesus, Buddha, Christ, cosmic consciousness, great spirit, anyone, anywhere, I'll do anything if you just show me how to live. And so I surrendered the personal sense of self completely, 100%. It's yours. Now you show me how to live. And the next day when I woke up, I made it my business as I walked through that day to say, it's your ball game. It's your show. Show me what you want me to do and give me thy power to carry it out. I surrendered. I began to let this invisible something that I did not even know if it existed take over. And guess what? It took over. Not only did it exist, but I came to see, I have come that you might have life and life more abundantly. Row upon row upon row of good and perfect gifts. Wow, what a change. And that was in 73, so almost 50 years ago. Now, getting back to Joel, this inner pleading testified to the vacuum somewhere within us, and this vacuum cried out to be filled. Oh, yes. Yet, at the very same time that I was on my front porch steps, and you were where you were, and Joel was where Joel was, this Word made flesh the Son of God dwelt in us, but was shrouded about with so much darkness that we could not perceive it. We were not aware of its presence. And that's what I found until that night when I, a few nights later, a month later, when I had my book, Practicing the Presence, open in my lap, and I had been reading something in there. And I set it aside and I closed my eyes. And suddenly I felt a presence touch me on the side of my face. And it was tingly and gentle and loving. And there was a sense of peace that came over me. And I knew, oh, the presence is real. And I knew. And from then until now, which is 49 years later, I've never been alone. That presence has been with me at some time during the day, every day of my life. Last year, a year ago, March, when my heart so-called failed, the last thing I did as the ambulance pulled up to the hospital was they wheeled me in there, and I took a deep breath. And I rested and relaxed back into that presence. And I only said one word, Father. And the next thing I know, John and my wife were praying and my eyes opened. And I said to the nurse, oh, that's, you have pretty hair. She had these, the neatest highlights. She turned what? They didn't expect me to wake up. I said, you have pretty hair. And then everything got busy. And so thank you, John. Thank you, my wife, Madeline. Thank you, Mystical Principles Group. You did a really good healing there. All right. So, yes, the presence is real. But now I knew from experience, not because Joel said it in a book. Whether we struggled for a healing or to be free of sin, false appetite, or lack, what we were really struggling for was to get back to our Father's house, to drop the sense of a personal I, and once more rest in the assurance that we are not a prodigal. In that earnest longing and struggling, the false sense of self drops away. That's what happened to me. And greater harmony appears. In our ignorance, we call that a healing. It is not. It is the more appearing of our divine selfhood. Yes, the more appearing of this impersonal self. This word made flesh. I came to see, well, I thought to myself, the very next time I got into trouble, I thought to myself, why is this personal self come back? I don't understand it. I was free from it. And that's when Chuck said, well, it's the thing that will keep you walking. There are more principles. There are more dimensions than the fourth. There are more heavens than just the first and second. So it's the thing that keeps us walking. And so I discovered, oh, I have to surrender again. In fact, this man told me before he passed, there will never be a time when we don't have to surrender. Oh, okay then. In reality, we have never been separated from God. You see, that was all a dream. It hurt. Oh, yes, it hurt. But it was a dream. And once I surrendered and turned within, turn ye and live, and this word became flesh and started living me, well, I discovered oneness. I and the presence are one. In reality, we have never been separated from God. But from the time we were infants, we have been taught about a personal I. I am Mary. I am Bill. I am Joel. Instead of humbly realizing, be still and know that I am God. I at the center of me is God, and therefore I live by grace and by divine inheritance. I can remember when I was very young, playing with marbles out by the street. And I remember my mother saying, don't talk to strangers. They might kidnap you, Billy. And what would we do then? And of course, what? Strangers? I wish she had known about all this. Maybe she does now. I hope. I pray. May she find the peace that I have. However, I bought that. Another time, she said, when you get on your own, you're going to discover there's nobody that cares about you except your family. Well, I'm certainly glad to say that's not true. I just had a wonderful time with John and Kim up in New Jersey, and it sure seemed like they cared about us. They showed us a wonderful time. Great hospitality. Thank you, guys. All right. To live by that divine inheritance does not mean that we do not work. Yeah. Some people, not all, say, well, God's taking care of me now, so I don't have to do anything. There is no provision in heaven or on earth for parasites. Regardless of the material wealth that we may inherit, we cannot sit by and watch the sun rise and set without working and in some way making a contribution to this world. Yes, we have to add to the world. And that is why I make these talks. Number one, first, because I love God. And I realized one day, what can I give God that he doesn't have? I can give him myself. And so that's what I'm doing. But the other reason is because I know the secret of life and the secret of supply. You have to give it away in order to have it. And so I have to share my time, my money, my voice, my studies, whatever realization I've had with you. And I do. Okay, so it is that even though we are heirs of God and through our spiritual realization do ultimately derive our good from God, we will work. Okay, so you've got to add to the world. Nothing can come into our experience except through an activity of our consciousness. Excuse me. That's one of the infinite way principles. Okay? Nothing can come into your experience except through an activity of your consciousness. It is through consciousness that we entertain a sense of separation from God. But it is also through our consciousness, when we consciously make ourselves one with the source, that we are restored to the realized oneness with God. All right, so that's an activity of consciousness. How do you make yourselves one with the source of all good? because that's an activity of consciousness, and that's how you get back to the Father's house. And house means consciousness. So how do you do it? You don't just read over it and say, oh, yes, that's so lovely. You have to know how to do it. It began for me on my front porch step. I became still enough to listen. I became teachable. You show me, Father. I don't know anything, even though I have all these scriptures memorized. I've come to the conclusion that a personal sense of self can do nothing. So, Father, you show me, you take over. And that's where it began. And then in the days that followed, it became walking around saying, thy will be done. Thy will is my sufficiency. Thy grace. That was practicing the presence. Practicing remembering the word. Later, it came to me in meditation, where I could be still enough to feel the presence as I did in that chair, as I have today in this chair. Ah, there's nothing like it. So, we must know how to practice being one with our source, and it is an activity of consciousness. Something that you do, that I do, in my chair, or while walking around, or even while driving. More than once while driving, I've started to feel upset because somebody cut me off, and I stop and take a breath while I'm driving and say, I'm moving through my own consciousness, so there can't be anything there to disturb me. You see, we live and move and have our being in our very own consciousness. And there is where the word is made flesh. So there can be nothing else but that. All right, so attaining union with God does not usually come in a single bound. It is more than likely to be the result of years of dedicated study, dedicated meditation, dedicated service. There's a word. Yes, it's all three of those things. You listen to a talk, you read a book, you read a scripture, you meditate. On part of that talk, you meditate on one of those scriptures, you meditate on part of that book. And so, when you're done meditating, what do you do? Do you get up and go put $100 on the horse races? Or in the modern days, I guess, go smoke a joint? Is that what you do? Well, that's living a personal sense of self. And you're just delaying the inevitable. No, you get up and you are of service to this world. And I don't care if it's praying for someone. You know, we're supposed to pray for our enemies. And that's what I practice. And I teach my family and my children to practice that too. And so no matter who wins the election, I pray for the other person. And then I come back and pray for the person that won the election. No matter who's bombing us in some foreign land, I pray for those people. Not that they'll be successful with their bombs, but that they'll see the rightness of the presence. That they'll see that Allah is love. And so I pray for my enemies. And I'm not carrying anything around. I don't have resentments. I don't know. If you do, then you need to pray for your enemy. because I have made a commitment that I'm going to meditate. I'm going to find that presence, that word within me. And I can't do it if my house is filled with resentments. That's why he says, first be reconciled to your brother, and then come and offer thy gift. Okay, so I needed to say that. The end result of passing through this first degree, well, he says, as we come toward the latter part of the first degree experience, we perceive that we are living more by grace than by personal effort. We are living more by a power that is doing things for us without our taking conscious thought, and sometimes doing them before we even know there is a need for them. Yes, I've had that happen a lot of times. There was a time when the area that Madeline and I were working in closed down. And suddenly there we are. We have houses and we have cars and we have bills. And how are we going to pay them? Well, I didn't have to wonder very long because I got a letter in the mail within a day or two that said, "Hi, you don't know me, but I'm an attorney and I'm handling your great aunt's affairs now that she's passed away." And it just so happens she's left you $10,000. And all you have to do is sign this paper and we'll mail you a check. Well, okay, I signed the paper and her estate gave me $10,000. And we put it in the bank, paid our bills. And before you knew it, we had another area that we were involved in order to have an income and in order to add to the world. And all our bills were paid right on time. And I know people really, they wiggle in their seats when I say that. I told you before, I had a man pound on the table, "God has never gotten me a job." Well, that's because you've never let him. Or you didn't know the way. You didn't know you had to go within. So we're learning. And toward the end of the degree, of the first degree, we gain an absolute inner conviction that where we are, God is. And that's the truth. That's what happened to me. That the place whereon we stand is holy ground. That there is a He that performs that which is given us to do, including paying the bills. See, the impersonal life. You have to get out of the way and allow the impersonal life to pay the bills. Not you, not the person. Get out of the way over here. Okay, Father, you live the life. And then the impersonal life can live you and pay your bills. Honest. Joel said he discovered that love could pay his bills. Wow. That there is a divine grace that provides for our needs, not by might nor by power, but by the very gentle Spirit of God that is within us. Now that's another area where people run into trouble. How can the infinite be in me? And the answer is, it can't. You are in the infinite. Your consciousness, your presence, the word of you is infinite. And these images are in your consciousness. And so when it says that I and the Father are one, when it says you go within to commune with the word, it doesn't mean you go within like you're going within to a, in a, let me use my finger here, going into a door into a house. That's not what it means, going within. It's not what it means, God is within you. God is within your substance, just like blue and red are within purple. God is within your substance. And so within you, within your substance, is the living word of God. You see? And so we're learning to go within our substance, within our consciousness, and there feel that word. Okay. In going through the first degree, a transformation of consciousness takes place. And in proportion as we attain an awareness of God's presence within and a realization of the infinite invisible, we begin to lose our hate, our fear, and our love of the external world. Through our enlightened consciousness, we perceive that all the evils of the world are shadows brought about by the universal belief in two powers. And we are losing that belief in proportion as God is becoming more and more real as a presence and as a power. Okay, so something that, again, we don't like to hear. Joel says repeatedly, you must lose your fear, your hate, and your love of the external world. Now, I can explain it to you logically, but it's not really logically when you think about it. How can you live an impersonal life if you're living a personal life? You can't do both. You can't do both. Only one can exist in your consciousness at any time. Yes, I am fully aware that you can feel your body and feel the presence at the same time. That's not what I mean. I mean the substance of your consciousness. Either you're loving someone out here, a person, and the substance of your consciousness is personal love, or you have discovered, as I have, the one presence in the many, and you love that presence appearing as the person. You're focused on the presence, not the person. But the person still feels loved. The student said to Joel, how can you say you don't feel love? Why, Joel, you're one of the most loving people we know. It's because he was focused on the presence everywhere. Omnipresence. And that recognition they felt as love. So you're not going to be getting divorced because you're no longer loving your spouse. You're going to be loving the infinite omnipresence appearing as your spouse. And a real love will exist. All right, so we're not supposed to love something in the external world in that personal way anymore. We can't have both. We can't serve God and mammon. We're not supposed to fear anything out there. We're supposed to rest in the Father's presence, in the Word within. We're not supposed to hate anything or resent anything. Because then the fabric of our consciousness is made up of hate. So, yes, pray for your enemies. Pray for them. Not that they succeed over you, but that they find the kingdom within themselves. And then you won't fear, you won't hate, and you won't love anything out here or anyone out here. And yet, those who come in contact with you will feel loved because you will recognize the reality of them, the presence, the Word made flesh. You see that? It's really different living this mystical way of life, but it's quite wonderful. Okay, so he says, undue love for the things of this world also lessens. It does not mean that we are not to enjoy the good things of life. It means that we are not to be so attached to them, to any form of materiality, as to make of it a necessity. Now, when you hear somebody say, Janice has died and I can't live without her, that's what we're talking about. Your consciousness is filled with a personal sense of loss. But if you love the one and the many, you can never be with that. I told you, I have never been alone since that day in 73, that night. That night sitting in my chair. I've never been alone, ever. Any place I've been, up in a plane with 35,000 feet, on a ship in the middle of the ocean, backpacking and up into the Redwood Forest in Northern California, down into Mexico, up into Canada, over in the Bahamas, down into Puerto Rico. I have felt this presence everywhere. Why? Because the presence is in my consciousness. My consciousness and the presence are one. My consciousness is everywhere, omnipresent. And the same is true of you. So, one of the first things we learn was that we are not alone. That's just what we were talking about. That there is a presence within us, a presence greater than anything in the world, a presence that in the beginning we call He. I've always called it, but I also call it Father. I recognize it as the source of the I that I am. It can never be seen, heard, tasted, touched, or smelled. It is known only when we experience it. We may say that we feel it, but we do not feel it through any sense of touch we may have. More correctly, we might say we are aware of its presence. And I sat in my chair and I became aware of the presence. I can't tell you how wonderful that is to not be alone in this crazy mixed up world. We practice the presence, which we later identify as God. That's an infinite way principle. As human beings, we are not God governed, nor are we under the law of God. And for this reason, anything can happen to us. All right, so here it is in a nutshell. If you are living in a personal sense of self, you're practicing being, let's say I'm practicing being Bill, and Bill needs to talk to the Social Security office, or Bill needs to take a drive somewhere, and I get in my car and I'm heading down to the Social Security office, and people have cut me off and it's hot and I need to turn on the air conditioner, and I'm living in a personal sense of self. All the while, all the time, the word is made flesh in my consciousness. If I will rise out of that personal sense of self. And so I catch myself and I pull over in a parking lot and I meditate. I become still. Oh. I'm sorry. I've been living the dream again. Let me be still. Father, lift up the Son of God. Lift up your presence, and I rest in it. thank you, Father. And I stop. I listen. And there is an inner movement. I feel it. I'm aware of its presence. Oh, thank you. And I rest for another minute in case there's something I need to hear. Like the word impersonal. And then I put my car in gear and drive to the Social Security office, take care of the business that they told me I needed to, and it all falls into place, and I'm coming out of there and I see someone else that I know, and we get to hug. And what has happened? I filled my consciousness with the presence, and the word has become flesh. It's wonderful. Walter C. Lanyon is right. It's wonderful. All right, but when you're living a personal sense of self, anything can happen. You're not God-governed, and you can tell. So, it's not, please don't get the religious view that, oh, well, I've got to be good or something bad will happen. That's not what I'm saying here. I'm saying when you live a personal sense of self, you're living in the pairs of opposites. Sometimes good will happen. Sometimes bad will happen. But you're living in the pairs of opposites, and you'll go back and forth and back and forth. That's the nature of a personal life. But when you're living in the impersonal, incorporeal, invisible presence, and your consciousness is filled with it, it then becomes the word made flesh. And only good happens. You see the person who gives you a hug. You make every green light on the way home. You come home and find there's a check in your mailbox that somebody sent you, and it covers exactly what you needed for something this weekend. You're living in the presence. You're practicing the presence. So it has nothing to do with being good or bad. It's either you're practicing a personal sense of self with the opposites, which you open the door to, or you're practicing the impersonal life and opening the door only to grace. While this process is going on, something else is taking place at the same time. We now begin to see that there is a spiritual something that is of far greater importance than the material. There is a spirit within us, and it is this spirit that is playing the most important role in our life. So all of that is the first degree. During the days of our dependence on human means, human ways and means, if we were having a physical problem, such as the heart causing difficulty, our whole attention would have been centered on correcting the heart. But through the practice of the presence and through meditation, something within us says, man shall not live by heart alone. Or it might say impersonal. It says something different every time. Now we are not thinking in terms of heart, liver, or lungs. We are realizing that man lives by the word. As a result of that realization, either the organ or function of the body is repaired, or we are able to live comfortably without it. Through inner unfoldment, we learn in this first degree that whereas before we thought we needed things on the outer plane, and our whole life struggle was to attain more of these things, Now we relax from the struggle and realize man does not live by bread alone. Do you see? The name of this chapter is The Secret of the Word Made Flesh. And now you know the secret. It has been revealed to you today. The secret is when we no longer live a personal sense of self and consciousness is filled with the Word. And then we become beholders and we behold the Word made flesh, forming itself as our experience, as our friends. It forms itself as the Comforter, omnipresent. It forms itself as the infinite supply, the substance of infinite supply. It forms itself as everlasting, eternal, immortal life. That's the secret of the Word. Can't tell it to anybody, but if you live it, they will see it. And so he says it comes down to how can I glorify God? Because when the Word is manifested, you're glorifying God. How can I glorify God? And the answer is you cannot. But if the Spirit of God dwells in you, then you become the child of God, an heir to all the heavenly riches, and then it glorifies the Father. Okay, the Word made flesh is the Son of God, or Christ. And it is in the midst of us for the purpose of performing the will of God. In this very moment, there is within us the Son of God, the Christ. This Christ is forever saying to us, I am come that you might have life and that you might have it more abundantly. Relax. Rest. You don't have to work that hard. See, it comes in modern words too, but the principle is the same. Regardless of the trials or tribulations that face us in our human, on our human way, our recourse is to remember consciously the Word made flesh that dwells within us and its function. After this truth, the secret, has been revealed to us, we then begin a most difficult part of our journey, because now comes that period when we have to make truth a part of our being and bring it to fruition in our life. And the way to accomplish this is through practicing the presence of God. All right, we're almost done here. When the full significance of the meaning of the Word made flesh dawns upon us, and we realize that it is the mediator between God and man, we begin to see that this presence and power of mediation is in our consciousness. And therefore, all that the Father intends for us individually to have is ours by the grace of this realized, raised up Son of God within us. The continued practice of the presence of God leads to an inner silence and stillness, so that the turmoil of the world does not enter in. And when we sit down, we find ourselves in a meditation in which we come into conscious union with God. We feel that Word, or we become aware of its presence. And we are witnesses now to the Christ that is living our life, beholders of its glory. No one's life becomes glorified that he may go through life sitting on cloud nine. One's life is glorified that it may be a service and a dedication to the Creator of all, the Spirit of God that dwells in us. during this first degree, and all of this is part of the first degree, we come to the realization that there is this inner spiritual substance activity law or presence, and that it is flowing out through our consciousness, becoming the substance of our new world. It's forming a new world, and you shall see a new heaven and a new earth. That's this, the Word made flesh. The man of flesh has died, and in a measure, the man who has his being in Christ or in the Word is now beginning to come alive, resurrected from the tomb of material beliefs, and risen into the realization of his spiritual identity. All right, so do you see the Word made flesh? Do you see it? Do you know what the secret is? Do you see the secret now of the Word made flesh? In his book, The Infinite Way, Joel, in the very first chapter, said, "In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God, and the Word was made flesh. The Word was made flesh, but it still is the Word. By being made flesh, it does not change its nature, character, or substance. Cause becomes visible as effect, but the essence or substance is still the Word, Spirit, or consciousness. In this way, do we understand that there is not a spiritual universe and a material world, but rather that what appears as a material world is the Word made flesh, Spirit made visible, or consciousness expressed as idea. So, what is the secret of the Word made flesh? It is that there are 5 billion people on earth, and only a handful, I don't know if it's 144,000, I don't know if it's 144 million, but only a handful of people know this secret. And it's the secret of the Word made flesh. And the secret is that you do not have to live a personal sense of self. You can put it off and put on immortality. You can put on the Word made flesh. When you become aware of that presence within you, you are feeling the Word spoken by God in the beginning, which is still the Word. And you're feeling it. You're feeling its movement. That's the Word made flesh. Now, what happens after that is you become aware of, Joel said, we call it a healing. But let's say we call it harmony. Harmony of being. Harmony of living. Harmony of supply. We see harmony. That's the mind's interpretation of this invisible Word made flesh that you're sensing. And so it's not really a healing, and Joel will tell you so. It's really more of this invisible Word made flesh appearing as harmonious living. I hope you see now the secret of the Word made flesh, because that Word within you has something to say to you. This writing in John's is not John's writing. This is the Word made flesh speaking within him as he went within. And so it's speaking to him, and it's speaking to you, and it's speaking to me, to the eye of me. And this voice, this Word says, and so you need to listen. The Word says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the husbandman. Every branch in me that beareth not fruit, he taketh away. And every branch that beareth fruit, he purgeth it, that it may bring forth even more fruit. Now are ye clean through the word which I have spoken unto you. You know what that means. It means if you don't abide in the word, you're abiding in a human sense of self. And the human mind takes over. And voila, take a look at the world and how well the human mind is doing. Or, he says, you can abide in him and bear fruit richly. What's fruit? That is the harmonious being that we're talking about. And so he says it plainly. Abide in me, and I in you. As the branch cannot bear fruit of itself except it abides in the vine, no more can ye except ye abide in me. How do you abide in me? How do you abide in the word? We said it already. You practice the presence when you're out here, walking around, doing your job, shopping, driving, cleaning the house. You practice the presence. Joel suggests that you have little 2-minute meditations, 2 or 3 minute meditations, maybe 12 throughout the day altogether. Why? Is it better if you have more? No. That's not the thing. It's not good and bad. It's not less and more. The reason why we're doing this, and pardon me again, I get dry. The reason why we're doing this practice is so that we may die to a personal sense of self and be reborn into this word made flesh manifesting and appearing as a harmonious I. Okay? And so how do we abide in it? We abide in it by taking those daily meditations, by practicing the presence as we're about our work, by listening to a talk, by saying something simple like, you don't have to work that hard. I am the way. See, all of these things help us to step out of a personal sense of self and rest back in the infinite, incorporeal, invisible word made flesh. And so that's how you abide in those ways. I am the vine, ye are the branches. He that abideth in me and I in him, the same bringeth forth much fruit. For without me, ye can do nothing. Well, you can do something, and then it's destroyed. And then you build it up, and then it's destroyed. And then you build it up, and then it's destroyed. And that's the nature of the belief in two powers. And that's the nature of the human mind. So, without me, ye can do nothing. What about this permanent, everlasting life? How do I do something there in that dimension? Well, if ye abide in me and my word abides in you, ye shall ask what ye will and it shall be done unto you. Herein is my Father glorified, that ye bear much fruit. So shall you be my disciples. All right, so if you are practicing the presence, if you are practicing feeling and becoming aware of this word made flesh within you, if you are practicing sitting still in your inner temple until you feel it move, then you know you are no longer making a world made by hands. No, now you are beholding this word made flesh, the temple not made by hands, eternal in the heavens. This is the temple that is eternal. And even if you shuck off the body, that temple is eternal. This is the temple that we want to dwell in, rest back in, and behold his glory in. All right, let's be silent for a moment in case there's anything we missed. The secret of the Word made flesh is one word, impersonal. You have an impersonal life, which will live itself where you appear. You only have to surrender. Get that personal self out of the way. Rest back and invite the Father, invite the I, invite the Word. Manifest thy will, thy grace, thy presence, and then stand still. And those that are on this path will be able to look at you and see Him that sent you. For those that see me, seeth Him that sent me. That's the Word within you speaking. Don't be quick to share this word, this secret, I mean. Don't be quick to share this secret with those of your family or those of your friends, unless they are on this path and they are walking this way and they are practicing the presence. Then, yes, you can share. I have discovered that I only have to rest back and behold. They may not understand it, but it may awaken in them an inner word. Thank you, everybody. It's been very wonderful for me to recall how deeply I love God, because God loved me first. Back in the days when I was not, there was not very much to love here that was manifesting. And now today I love Him with all my heart, mind, and soul. And because He's within you, I love you the same way. Thank you for joining me for this talk and for drawing this out of me. All from one word, impersonal.